Blog Talk Radio.
Good morrow and welcome back to The Realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into my realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis. And each of those creatives specialize in a plethora of different art forms. And tonight we've got an author coming back. And I know we got a lot of readers and authors out there. So, I'll introduce my guest here in a few seconds. But before we do, I also want to remind you that if you like what you hear tonight, you can follow me and find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at www.jvhilliard.com or follow at jvhilliardbooks on Twitter/X, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or just look for me as J.V. Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. So as we reach our witching hour tonight, let me cast my magical message spell and take control of the airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you D&D nerds out there, that duration of my transmutation magic is about 30 minutes. So set your sundials and let's enter the realm together. Today we're chronicling the adventures of fellow speculative fiction scribe Nathan Ogloff. He is an author. And I love the T-shirt that he's wearing on his website. We're going to talk a little bit about that later. Nathan, well met, my friend, and welcome to the realm.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, man.
Well, hey, look, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and where they can find you and your books.
So I'm a science fiction writer at the moment. I have a book out right now called The Sapien Empire, which is a post-apocalyptic story where civilization is making a comeback. And you can find a lot of my social media off of my website, nathanogloff.com. I do have a Goodreads profile. The book is available on Amazon, Apple Books, Nook, Kobo. And what else? Yes, I got a Facebook group. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Instagram's at Nathan Ogloff, as is TikTok. Twitter's at Unusual Author. And then the Facebook group is just the forge work of Nathan Ogloff. And this is the first book I've published, and I published it last month on February 6th.
Well, congratulations and welcome into the wonderful world of publishing. And let's start with that for a second, because a lot of our listeners are not just readers, but they're also authors. When you're an author, there's a crossroads that you come to nearly right away when you're determining whether or not you want to be an independent author or you want to go down the road of traditional publishing. Why did you choose the way that you chose? Tell us some of the goods, the bads, and the uglies that you've already experienced doing that.
I don't know if I necessarily chose. It was kind of chosen for me, because what happened was I finished the book in 2022, tried finding a literary agent for a year. I sent out like 40 to 50 query letters and no one was biting. In June of last year, I met with a marketing person who she convinced me to go the self-publishing route. And so I did. And in July, I went hard on the self-publishing route, and then, as I said earlier, I published it myself and got the book out there last month. As for the good and the ugly of is it just the good and the ugly of self-publishing, or just this whole author journey overall?
Well, I would say that just self-publishing. I know that there's strengths and weaknesses to each style. And, just from what you've seen so far, dipping your toe into indie authorship, what's worked out for you and what really hasn't?
I would say marketing is a different beast than writing. Like, you spend a lot of time getting better at writing and getting the skills required to craft a good story, but it doesn't necessarily translate to great story equals great marketing. So marketing is a completely different skill. A lot of the challenges were just wrapping my head around it, because I find there's a lot of chicken and egg problems they explain to you. And so it's like, well, how do I get around this thing if I need this thing first? If I need this thing first, then how do I get to that? And there's a lot you have to do for yourself. You don't have the resources that a traditional publisher would give you. They usually are able to, say, reach out to booktubers and pay them to promote, said book. I could pay for stuff, but I'm on a bit of a budget. And if I can do something for free, I will. It's the main challenge is just you have to do so much of it yourself. And so I do spend a good chunk of my day just doing marketing and ad work. It's a lot of just reaching out to booktubers, reaching out to book reviewers, reaching out to podcasts. You have to do the editing yourself. I did pay for an editor, but I have to go back to the edits and do it all. That came out of pocket. And then figuring out how to put your book out there is not a straightforward process. So I used Ingram Sparks, and that was a bit of a challenge to get the book cover right and get the format right so that when I put it for distribution, there were no problems with it. Wonder what else there is.
That's a heck of a list. You know, like I've literally seen, I'm a traditionally published author, and you know, I think it cuts both ways, as you mentioned. You get the support that you might not have otherwise, but you're also sharing royalties, and you're also, you don't have the independence, obviously, as you do as an indie author. You have to run things by the publishing house and your editors, and there's layers upon layers of edits that happen for good, right? I mean, I think it makes for a stronger product. But you know, there are days that I wake up as an entrepreneur and I'm jealous of indie authors, and that independence. And there's, you know, days I wish I went that way, but there's also days that I'm grateful, that I'm under that traditional publishing, kind of moniker. But, well, you know, let's get back to the basics for a second. I mean, what made you want to become a writer?
I've always wanted to create rich, intricate, detailed worlds that people can just dive into, immerse themselves in, and just be blown away. And I originally thought I was going to do that with films or video games. And this goes way back to like fourth or fifth grade when I saw the Star Wars trilogy. I was like, oh, I'm doing that. I got to do that. And so I thought I was going to do the video game route. That didn't work out. Got an idea for a novel, said, okay, this is a hell of a lot simpler than that. It's a pretty pure medium. It's pretty straightforward. Had this idea swimming around in my head, and I guess in a bit of a naive spurt of inspiration, I thought like, oh, I can just write this and get it out there, and it'll be great. And then lo and behold, I wasn't fully aware of what I was diving into. It took a little longer than I thought, but I think as Toni Morrison said, she said, if there's a story you want to read, but it doesn't exist, you're the one who has to write it. And so I had to write the story because no one else was going to do it except me.
Well, let's talk about your story then, the Sapient Empire. What inspired it? You mentioned Star Wars in there, and you said you had an idea that came to you. And you know, I do like the Toni Morrison quote. I think that's really apropos here. But what was the genesis behind it? What was the inspiration?
So it's the synthesis of two ideas. It's the first idea is me realizing what post-apocalyptic is. So yes, it's the collapse of our society, but when you kind of just zoom out and get the more objective perspective of history, every time a society has collapsed in the past, that to the perspective of the people that have come after is post-apocalyptic. So the Dark Ages is post-apocalyptic from the perspective of the Romans. The Bronze Age collapses the Dark Age from the perspective of the Mycenaeans. The collapse of classical Mayan civilization, to the people that came afterwards, that they're post-apocalyptic. And so it's like, oh, for people living through that, it's devastating. But over time, you can see something comes back. And so I said, oh, hey, why don't I deal with something coming back? That would be kind of interesting. And then the second idea comes from the failure of the UN. So World War II happens. There's all this devastation. They say, let's not do this again. Let's try to work our problems out peacefully. And then unfortunately, you see a lot of that just not happening. You have these five permanent members that throw their weight around and deny certain actions taking place because it's not in their better interest. And there's a lot of tragedies that happen across the world. And again, in a moment of just naivete, I think, I said, I wish there was just some group, mercenary, vigilante, whatever, that was just taking action into its own hands and fixing some of these problems. And so I said to myself, well, hey, wait a minute. What if as the rebuilding civilization in a post-apocalyptic world, they say, oh, let's do it right this time. Let's not repeat those mistakes. Let's actually create a better world and own up to it. And so over the course of the series, you're going to find out why a lot of that's easier said than done. But that's where the idea came from.
You know, that's a great, great storyline. I mean, the plot seems like it's something that's very readable. It's something that I would pick off of a bookshelf if I read your blurb and read it. But what makes your sci-fi novel different from other sci-fi novels? What makes you stand out when someone grabs you off a bookshelf?
So I've had one reviewer say that there is lots of detail and depth on every single page. I mean, as I said, you find out why making a better world is easier said than done. Well, you have to take a deep look into human behavior and the nuances of why people make the decisions they do. Also, I think what makes it unique is, as my dad once told me, and people have to take this with a grain of salt because I think parents have a bit of a colored perception of their kids' work. My dad said, it's like somebody from the 19th century living today, writing about events in the future. That's what the prose looks like. And also, a lot of the world building, I think, is quite unique. So, for example, I have a different take on the cause of the collapse of the post-apocalyptic era. It's not what we call a singular event. So most post-apocalyptic is singular. It's everything's fine, suddenly something happens, then everything goes to crap. If you think like nuclear war, zombies, virus, it's like instant. Well, mine isn't instant. It's society going out with a whimper, not a bang. And so it's just basically this long, slow collapse over the course of 100 years in the 21st century. And I really focus on it's just human decisions and infighting and arguing that causes a lot of that, right? And that's the focus on it. So it's the shades of gray, things are this, but they're not quite that. They're not always as straightforward as you like. There's a lot of detail and complexity to the societies and the solutions that we have to implement. I mean, as I said, in my book, it's the societies are complicated. People are complicated. The problems are complicated. So complicated problems require complicated solutions. And I also have a lot of portmanteau and wordplay that I have in my novels. For example, there's like shop garage, there's lord chief, off-gridders, is one of those terms. And so it's just really meant to be one of those stories where you look at it and you're like, this just, it blew me away. It came out of nowhere. It's many things all working together in sync and complementing each other.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I think that those kind of words and that kind of wordplay wreaks havoc on editors, you know, but it's fun, right? You know, so in some of my novels, I created words to describe, you know, certain things like the hail of magic is sort of the you know, the dwyamer of magic or the presence of the crackle of magic behind you that makes your hair stand up on the back of your neck, like that kind of stuff. And, you know, and your editors are looking at you like, what? Where did that come from? But, you know, I think it's necessary when you're writing either fantasy or sci-fi. But here's just something else that I think in most cases is necessary. In my world, when I write fantasy, writing a series is almost expected, if not demanded. There's very few standalone fantasy novels. There are. They exist, but they're not as common as series. What do you plan on doing? I know this is your first book. I'm not putting you on the spot and asking you about, you know, the spoiler alerts or anything like that. But are we going to see Empire become a series, or is this one of these instances where it's a one-time standalone, bang, you're done, and you're going to move on to the next sci-fi story? What do you plan on doing with your next steps?
It was originally meant to be one story, but then just given the scope of what I want to do, it eventually grew to two, then four, now an eight-book series. And I think that's understandable because he's rebuilding civilization across the planet, and the planet's big, and there's a lot of detail to that. So If people want to know what's going to be in the second novel, I just jokingly and shortly say, like, it's going to get crazy. And so what's going to happen is he's going to expand out. So the first novel, I deal with the Pacific Northwest and the mountainous interior. And then in the second novel, he starts to explore the plains and the Sonoran Desert further south. And so eventually I'm going to start doing story arcs from different perspectives of different people across the planet. And then it'll eventually all conclude in a nice epic crescendo, which I won't give too much away. And so that's the long goal I have. I can also say I've already started to plan out the third and fourth novels because I have a first draft of the second one already done.
That's great, man. Congratulations on that. And let me riff on that for 1 second. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. When you do something like sci-fi or fantasy, you spend so much time world building that your fan base, your readership, I think just expects that they don't want to get kicked out of that world. They just now immerse themselves in it and they're learning more about it. And I think that, it allows them to set expectation that there is going to be something after that. It's not a standalone spy novel where we already know what world we're in and the sun rises and sets into a 24-hour day and the sky's blue. You know, this is something where you're building an entire world. In this case, even though it's post-apocalyptic, it has some certain characteristics that they're going to want to see. And the fact that your character is, or your point of view, it sounds to me, like you said, they're going to be looking through different characters' eyes throughout the 8-book series. That is pretty cool, man. So off of that, do you have any characters in a novel that were inspired by other books or movies or video games? I know you're a gamer. I mean, was there anybody that, like you said, oh, you know what, this character is going to be just like character A in Star Wars or Star Trek or Lord of the Rings? I mean, was there something like that, or you know, all your characters, were they introspective? Did they come from inside you? And you know, how did you create those character arcs?
So I actually get inspired by real life. So if I'm going to make a character, it's usually inspired by a real life figure. So
cool.
Except the villain of the first book, the villain of the first book's kind of sort of, at least his physique is inspired by this one CSO I met when I was in construction, which is just construction safety officer. The main character, the protagonist, is a little bit of me in the story. Like, what would I do if I was in this position? There's also a female character who she has aspects of my mom. I mean, not entirely my mom, but just aspects of that I thought, like, that'd be kind of cool to put in. And then, that's basically where I get my characters, and that's usually main characters. Now, side characters, it's usually if I have a friend or if I know someone, they're like, can I be in your novel? It's like, you can, but just to let you know, you'll be a side character. And so if I need to, like, create, like, a commander or a captain, it's like, what's this person going to look like? Oh, I'll just make him look like that guy. And so, yeah, that's how I come up with my characters. And a lot of them are meant to be amalgamations of certain historical figures that served in a similar role.
Makes sense. So let me ask you this then. I mean, I know that you're a newish author. You're no longer new. You've broken out and you've got this series and book one is just launched and now you're getting your sea legs as you go out. What for you, and I know that a lot of our readers are not just, or excuse me, listeners are not just readers, but they're also authors. But, you know, what's the most exciting thing about becoming an author? For you, what was the most exciting moment?
Well, just the fact that I was living a dream I've had since childhood. Because, like I said, I saw Star Wars, and I see, like, Dune and The Matrix and Lord of the Rings and all that, and you think, like, I want to do that. I want to be the guy that creates something that just blows people away, and I want to be in that position. And so just the fact that it was actually happening when I started telling people, like, I've got this book, here's what it's about, when I started reading my third draft in front of a critique group, it's like, okay, it's now going into the world. And then seeing the cover art was great, and then when it was finally on Amazon, and I started getting people to review it, and they got back to me with good reviews, it was just just the fact that, I mean, it's kind of like giving birth when you think. So it's like the greatest aspect is like you just see your child like out in the flesh and it's starting to grow. That's what was the best. Just the fact that I'm actually making it happen after so many years.
That's a really cool answer, man. Thanks for sharing that. I'll ask you this too, because you are indie, and so a lot of this is an investment in not just your own time, but your money. And since our readers like this question, I ask it a lot. Or not readers, I keep saying readers. Since our listeners are readers and authors, and they like this question a lot, I keep asking it, which is, as an author, what's the best money you've spent to date? You know, what do you look back and say, well, I'm glad I spent that couple hundred bucks?
I would definitely say the premium package on my cover art, because I found this really great artist and I made a mock-up and said, roll with this. He got back and people have been like, holy cow, dude, that's a really striking, great cover. And so at first I was like, are people going to like this? And it turns out they don't just like it, they love it. And so, so far that's been, yeah, the greatest money I've spent on this.
Yeah, you know, the cover, if those who haven't seen it, I mean, it really has, obviously, I wouldn't say it doesn't necessarily scream post-apocalyptic, but it's definitely futuristic, and it has sort of like a Dune meets Mad Max kind of look to it. I enjoyed it. I think the title is just bang on, man. It's well done. But so last question before we get to our lightning round. I know that authors often have writing prompts, and since on your website I see you wearing a Man of War shirt, I thought I might be the only author that has ever listened to Man of War for inspiration, especially for battle scenes. So I'm going to assume that you do the same thing. Is music, does that help you prompt, you know, your writing, or is there some other kind of odd writing habit that you have that, you know, you can share with others and maybe they do the same thing. It'll help them get over the finish line for their novel too.
The only habit I have for writing is when I write, I disconnect my internet so I'm not distracted. But in terms of Manowar, it was a couple of years ago, I just like really started to get into heavy metal and I was like, this music's on a completely different level. It's just like, this is it. This is who I am. And I do, it doesn't necessarily like give me ideas, but what it does is it makes me happy and relaxes me. And when I'm happy and pumped and relaxed, then that's when like I'm in the best position I can be in for my mind to run on autopilot. And then that's when the ideas just, they randomly come in. And so that's the reason I listen to it.
Cool. Well, look, we're at that time of the show where we start to transition into a little bit of a lightning round. And as I mentioned to you off air, these questions are designed to, you know, elicit the right kind of funny responses, get something right out of you without you thinking about it. But I'm going to start off with a softball because we were just talking about it. What is your favorite Man of War song?
Die for Metal.
There you go. For me, it's always been Holy War, although Black Wind, Fire, and Steel isn't bad either if you go old school.
That's true.
That's where I am with that. Second thing, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars, just because it inspired me to do this.
Gotcha. Do you have a favorite Star Wars character?
Darth Vader, I think, is a really great, complex, nuanced villain. But Chewbacca, I think, is also an interesting second for just a protagonist.
Gotcha. So are you a Harry Potter fan?
No, I like what Henry Cavill's answer was when somebody said Harry Potter or Game of Thrones. His response was Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. So you just stole, I was going to say Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones, and you beat me to it. So which one is it for you?
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I'm with you there, brother. I was steeped and born into that. And so I've learned to appreciate it. Nothing against Game of Thrones. I enjoy it. That's the dark fantasy side of me that I really enjoy exploiting in some of my novels too. But Lord of the Rings, you know, all the way home. So you're invited to a lunch with one other author, living or dead. Who would it be and why?
Mark Twain, just because I like his down-to-earth sense of humor. I like how just like he seemed like the kind of guy you could have a drink with, and I like his just quirks, and I'd like to see how he basically responded to me and what I'm all about.
Yeah, you know, he's one of those guys that they're almost too unique not to add to the list. At one time, I threw out name three, and I confused some folks, and so I had to, you know, I limited it down to one. But I'm glad you said Mark Twain. I think he's a lot of people's favorites, and that's a hard one not to have on your wish list there. Last question. There's a library burning, and you rush in to help, and you can only save one book, and that book can't be one of your own. Which book is it and why?
Let's go with Foundation and Empire by Isaac Asimov.
Ooh, you are the first one on this show in 2.5 years that have mentioned Isaac Asimov, and I'm surprised because of the depth and breadth of the Asimov library. You could almost make an entire library out of that guy was prodigious in his writing, and that's great, man. Nice call. I'll give you props for that. Look, we're coming to the end of the show. Only have a few minutes left. Why don't you tell and remind everybody where they can find you and where they can get your books?
Yeah, so you can get my books off of Amazon, Apple Books, Google Books, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Nook. And you can find a lot of my socials off of my website, nathanogloff.com. I have a Facebook group, Forge Work of Nathan Ogloff, Instagram at Nathan Ogloff, Nathan_Ogloff. And it's the same for TikTok, Twitter at Unusual Author. And I do have a Goodreads account, too, where you can follow me and leave my book reviews. And so, yeah, that's where you guys can get me, make sure to buy it and leave me a great review.
Nathan, thank you very much for coming on The Realm tonight. And I also want to thank our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine. AlteredRealityMag.com will take you right there. And if you are a speculative fiction fan or you're a fan of speculative poetry, that's the place to be. You'll find everything from sci-fi to fantasy to horror to the gothic, to stories about cryptids and monsters, and, of course, dystopian stuff. A lot of the same things I think you'd hear and read from my side of the table and also from Nathan's. And go check them out at alteredrealitymag.com. Again, Nathan, thank you very much for the time, my friend. It was great to have you on the show, and good luck with the launch of the book, and I'm looking forward to getting into the series.
Thank you, man. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, no, it's been my pleasure. And to our followers, thanks again for lending us your ear tonight. And until next time, I am JV Hilliard, and may your gods go with you. Thanks, Nathan.
No problem.